Alright, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You listen to myself, Albert, and as always, I'm joined by my brother Barney. How are you doing, Barney? How's things?
Yeah, good man. Excited to talk about the big news this weekend. A lot of people coming against Paris Hilton's brother-in-law putting himself on the last minute of his team getting relegated.
You're on his side, Barney. Two sides to every story.
I was going to defend him a little bit, just because, like...
Well, do you want to explain what this is? Because I'm aware not all our listeners follow us on Twitter.
Well, let me get the facts. So, like, it's Paris Hilton's brother-in-law, who I presume has a fair bit of money, is an investor in third tier. What's the team name?
It's Villaverdens. Villaverdens.
Lank Villaverdens. So they're in their last game of the season. Is it last game of the season? And is it they drawing?
They were losing 1-0 at the time.
Losing 1-0, but they needed a result to sort of stay up, essentially. Is that right?
I think, in fairness, the situation was that they were relegated anyway, no matter what the result was.
Oh, well there you go. And so he brings himself on. 45 years old, never played football before in his life. He's done a bit of training, from what I gather.
45 years old. He's literally trained this week.
This week. So a week's worth of training, having never played football before. Throws himself on, and then they clip to like the I don't know, one of the boxes, and he's obviously brought a few friends along with him to see it. And like,
yeah,
the only thing I was going to say, like, you know, if it's not like the third tier of English football, you know, it's a bit looser, maybe that's just, I don't know, but I don't think that's unfair to say. So, like, you know, the guy's paid his money, can he not give himself a game? Would you not?
I think it was a disgrace to professional football. And in the title of this podcast, I'm going to put Barney defends Paris Hilton's, was it stepbrother? I don't know. Half brother, whatever it is. Yes, that was a stupid story. But of course, Barney's joking. That wasn't the big news this weekend. The big news was, of course, that Sporting were crowned champions of the Primeira Liga after they beat Portimonense and saw Benfica lose away at Famalicão, which meant that after 32 weeks of the Primeira Liga season, Sporting now sit 8 points clear at the top of the table with only 2 games of the season left to play. It might be a slightly odd podcast this week for two reasons. The first being that long-term listeners will know that at the end of each season we do an in-depth end-of-season review show where we analyse every single team in the league's performance over the season as a whole, meaning we're probably not going to do too much in-depth analysis in this show about Sporting season as a whole, and actually the same for Vizela, who were relegated this week, who will come on for. We won't talk too much in depth about, you know, what has led to them being in this situation, but we will cover both of those games and talk about what happened, as well as the Benfica game and a couple of other games of interest. Also, slightly different week because I have spent the whole day playing football on the Leyton Orient pitch, and also I'm going on holiday tomorrow, so I am quite unprepared. Barney's probably going to be carrying this episode, for which I'm very grateful, but we hope that this episode is still informative and entertaining as always. And before we get stuck in, just a reminder that if you are a fan of the show and you enjoy listening, to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or a star rating on Spotify. It's always helpful just to simply share this episode with your friends that you think might enjoy it, anyone you know that's interested in Portuguese football. And if you're really enjoying the show and you want to get involved even more, you can become a Long Ball Football socio for just £1 per month over on our Patreon page. And the link to that is in the description of this podcast episode. But without further ado, let's get on to the football and start, as we always do, at the top of the table, which means starting with Sporting. And on Saturday night, before they knew the Benfica result. Sporting had a job to do against Portimonense, which they did in impressive fashion, scoring three goals and keeping a clean sheet against a very informed keeper to win the game 3-0. Just another example from me, Barney, of how Sporting are very, very capably overcoming every single obstacle placed in their way this season. There doesn't really seem to be a problem that they're not able to overcome in their charge for the title. And I think that's really one of the main reasons why they are the league title holders this season.
Yeah, I think I joked about it in our previous show that, you know, they might come up against a Nakamura performance of his life, but although he did have a very good game, the Portsmouth goalkeeper, but, you know, they were able to see this game away. Obviously, once again, another early goal. I think it was a few weeks ago I was talking about the sort of the times of the in the game where Sporting are scoring, and I think out of all the league, within the first 15 minutes, they're right up there, head and shoulders above anyone else in this league. And, you know, this goal, the first goal, Nuno Santos assist for Pelinho, just exactly what they needed. Nuno Santos, I mentioned as well recently about how his effect in Sporting in terms of goal contributions, it's something like when he's playing, they're averaging over 3 goals per 90. When he's not, it's much less. And you see that in terms of, you know, obviously being a natural winger, he's absolutely lethal on that left-hand side, scored Portsmouth all sorts of problems. But I think probably the more interesting one is Paulinho, right? Who playing alongside Gyökeres in this game. You know, he is just, well, to bring a sort of global statistic, he's the most efficient striker in Europe, ahead of Harry Kane and Mbappe, in terms of his actual goals against his expected goals. You know, he is the leading striker out of all of Europe's leagues for goals against expected goals, which means he's just putting away any chance he's given, no matter how difficult. To add to that, Gyökeres is actually seventh in that top 10 list of players in Europe. And that has been key to Sporting success this season. You know, they've played very good football. They've been excellent defensively. But they have finished their chances, and they, you know, Gyökeres as well himself has a really good turnaround in terms of goals against expected goals. So these two strikers, and we've talked about at several points this season with Paulinho, you know, think of last season when this confidence looks a bit shot. He struggled. He wasn't able to get those goals. The fact he's had that pressure from this season and is coming here and there, but always delivered, it sort of shows the difference. And also a reminder of how good a striker he is. We shouldn't forget how good he is. And, you know, despite Gyökeres being here and, he's looking excellent himself. It's just, I don't know if you agree with this, Albert. I think Gyökeres has dipped a little bit towards the end of the season, whether that's him being tired. You know, Amarin said himself last week when he came at half time and got those goals, you know, he needs to look after himself. He's played a lot of football, but he's so keen to play. And I don't know if we're seeing that tiredness sort of creep in terms of certainly his numbers aren't as good as they were in the first half of the season, but still, you know, the goal for him in this game, a goal for Paulinho. And I think a nice reminder really of especially considering other teams in this league, how lucky and how good Sporting strikers have been this season. It's, you know, that has been potentially the difference maker in this title race.
Absolutely. And it's something we've spoken about multiple times at different points in the season. Actually, I think it's something we spoke about quite early on in the season, wasn't it? After only just a few games, where we said that actually Paulinho looked like he was really benefiting from this strike partnership, as you say, with taking the pressure off and allowing him to play a bit more of a supporting role, which we know he's good at. And I think that is actually a really interesting statistic that you bring up about the fact that he is scoring a lot of goals from the chances that he's getting. Because if you remember, when he was starting up front by himself every week, that was one of the criticisms almost that went against him, wasn't it? Which was that he wasn't able to take chances, and people questioned whether he'd be able to take chances in big games. Well, this season, definitely, he's taken chances in big games, and and got Sporting a lot of valuable points along the way alongside Victor Gyökeres. And I think the whole thing about Gyökeres' form, which is probably fair, that he had a less purple patch, perhaps the last five games or so, maybe a bit more. I think possibly also what's we know now is that he's probably been playing with low level injury for this last part of the season, which was what saw him not start the game against Porto, because Amorim had to protect him. So probably that comes into it, and perhaps he did have fitness issues. But I think, you know, obviously his contribution has been undeniable. And what I would take from that really is that if you're able to keep him 100% fit for a season, then, you know, what would he be able to produce then, seeing as his goal return is so impressive with a short spell at the end of the season out. Not out, but carrying a small injury, most likely. I've gone down your route, Barney, of looking into statistics. More basic ones, though. I just was interested to get a picture of this game, and I think to describe this game as dominant is an understatement. Sporting had 67% of the possession. They had 20 shots total compared to two for Porto Milens. They had 11 shots on target compared to zero for Porto Milens. Sporting had an expected goals of 3.59, while Porto Milens had 0.05. You know, and I don't think it's the first time this season we've seen a performance like this from Sporting. Not only have they won games when it matters, but they've won very convincingly and dominated smaller teams on multiple occasions. The only caveat to that, Barney, is going back to something we said on last week's show with Zach, which I think a few people took issue with, about how Amorim has perhaps made mistakes in games against bigger teams by messing with that system. And I think, you know, the lineup that Amorim put out in this game is an example of a lineup where Sporting can really dominate a game from start to finish and stifle their opponents and not give them any opportunity to build any confidence. And, you know, if they perhaps put out a lineup like this and played in the same way that they had in this game against Porto, perhaps they could have won that game in a convincing manner. And I think games like this just serve to illustrate that point of when Amorim puts out his best team and puts out his best attacking players, they have an ability to completely dominate games and really rip apart teams.
I think that is a mixture of things, right? I think we have been right to criticise some of his decisions in the big games, and perhaps you could suggest he's overthought it. Inacio left wing back, for example, and that. But I also think we have seen this season, and what's been sort of one of the difference maker has been Amorim's flexibility in some of these smaller games, like this game against Porto Milens. I think it was the right thing to do to play Paulinho and Gyökeres against that Porto Milens back line. You know, as low down the table as Porto Milens are, you know, they do have some very robust defenders in that team, and you know, the ability to really battle with some strikers. So putting Paulinho and Gyökeres both in that starting 11, you know, that was going to cause problems for Porto. So I think that was good. And I think that's, you know, that's something that we've seen a bit more of throughout the season in different games, little tweaks, bit more flexibility from Amorim, and his in-game management as well. We've seen vast improvement. So I think that was, you know, I think, like I said, I think he had got it wrong a few times, but I think in a way it's actually been one of the positives this season is Amorim's, just as his, you know, he's not so stubborn in his and rigid in his tactics and his team selection. Just one thing that sort of took me by surprise, Albert, is that the list of players who are in this championship winning team compared to the last time that Amorim won it. So alongside that, Amorim's manager, Nuno Santos, Paulinho, Sebastián Cuartas, Pedro Gonçalves, Antonio Adnan, and Gonçalo Inácio are all two-time champions for Sporting. That number seems quite small in a way, but it also makes sense because there has been a huge amount of change in this Sporting team from the last time that team won. We've seen so many players this season come into that team. You know, I felt Brancaccio was a bit unlucky not to get a start in this game. You know, Pedro Gonçalves slipping into the midfield. But, you know, he's been excellent in recent weeks. You think of all the other players, you know, Trincao's been great, obviously Jenny Katsumo, but it's a healthy reminder, I think. And also, sorry, Franco Israel in goal. Adnan played the vast majority of the season. I think the reports come out that Adnan's not going to renew his contracts and is going to leave at the end of the season. Israel's come in and done, a pretty good job. Maybe one mistake springs to mind, but otherwise, so there's been, there's been. We shouldn't forget, this, though there are some players there from that last title winning season, this is an almost completely different squad, and arguably a sort of stronger squad in terms of depth, I would say. There's lots of players who deserve credit for this title winning season, and it's just funny that it was, or Gyökeres is obviously the obvious one, but otherwise, and Trincão getting the goal sheet as well, but I think the point I'm trying to make is, there's this is a new Almeria, and this is definitely a new sporting team.
Absolutely. Just quickly on Porto and Ensbarney, a very, very defensive setup from Paulo Sergio, as we expect in an away game against a big team. Still, though, they conceded an awful lot of chances, as you alluded to. Only their goalkeeper Nakamura really prevented it from being 5-6 or even 7-0. Obviously, not a game that they expect to win, but to make almost quite literally zero impact on the game is probably a bit disappointing. And we'll come on to next a game where a smaller team did manage to make a big impact against one of the big clubs, and it's perhaps a bit of a shame that Porto Benens weren't able to do that at all.
I think it was a sort of performance to expect, really, although there wasn't much. I think this is mainly due to Sporting's defensive ability rather than Portland's lack of trying in terms of the potential to hit them on the counter attack. That's sort of been the thing we've seen from Portland's a few times, but they weren't able to do that. First time in 2 years, Albert, that a team's fielded an 11 with no Portuguese players. Felipe Alves was out of the team for this one. So
Wow.
last time was Bovista versus BSAD in 2022. I think
And
it was
which team was it then?
I think it was
B-side?
BSAD, yeah.
Okay.
So yeah,
Wow.
that's
Doesn't
fairly
happen a
interesting.
doesn't happen a lot in this league, does it?
No. So, but look, I think I think I indulge myself too much to think that they would ever get anything out of this game. They've got Rio Ave next week and Ferenc. They're still down there, but they'll be looking at those other games really to sort of get points. And unfortunately, yeah, no, Paulo Sergio couldn't sort of have an effect on this title.
So, Barney, what we're trying to do here is really sell people the benefits of signing up to the Long Ball Football Patreon. And one of the main ones being the Long Ball Football preview show that we'll do. It's very hard to do that when on last week's preview show, Barney was really advocating for the fact that Paulo Sergio could pull off an upset in this game. And then we've got to justify those
I
those
was
comments
looking
at
for
the
narratives, I was like, yeah.
No, it's all fun and games. Definitely worth a listen. So don't let that stop you signing up. Barney, shall we move on and talk about the other big game this weekend? Of course, the Benfica result, which handed Sporting the league title as they fell to a surprising 2-0 defeat at Famalicão. Not only the game that made Sporting champions, but also, Barney, the result which ruined my upcoming holiday to Lisbon, as I was going to be there this weekend when Sporting were expected to be crowned champions, and I was planning on going to the celebrations in town, but Benfica decided to be shit the other day and ruin that. So thank you very much. But no, seriously, I have to say, look, to be fair, it was actually a really, really good game. A really interesting watch for the neutral. A flurry of early disallowed goals, one for each team, which kind of set the tone. Benfica did actually score after 2 minutes or so, which was ruled out. And that kind of made you think, well, maybe Benfica are up for this. But then Famalicão responded just 3, 4 minutes later with a goal that was then ruled out. Obviously, it didn't affect the scoreline, but really did set the tone for the game. Some really good chances and some very good football. Benfica, I thought, started the game strong, but Famalicão were very competitive, really grew into the game, ended the game the better team for me, and they were rewarded for that competitiveness with two late goals, which gave them a deserved win. Man of the match, Barney, for me, Puma Rodriguez, who caused real problems for Benfica down the right-hand side. really, really exciting player to watch. I know he's a player that you like as well.
Yeah, well, he caught my eye when he first came here as a Famalicão, but he's had a very sort of big injury, but I think almost kept him out for a year. So, because this is the last time he scored in the league was against Bovista in 2022, so that shows you how long he's been out and how long he's been able to, well, since he's scored and yeah, he was great in this game. You know, he's showed everything he's got in terms of being a really dangerous winger, lots of pace, and really tested Ekeresh, who came in at left back for Benfica in this game. Yeah, I mean, look, I guess I will come back to Famalicão because there are a lot more positives, but I guess we've got to sort of elaborate on the negatives that Benfica brought in this game. And it's, I don't know how much it is in hindsight, but it feels like every week we're looking at this as a team selection decision for Roger Schmidt and sort of questioning it. And I can't work out if it's, I guess, the striking position, right? Because I think Marcus Leonardo's stats have been great in terms of his goals per minute. Usually coming on as a sub in the second half or late on in the second half and picking up a goal or two. You know, in terms of his goals per minutes ratio, they're sky high because of those sort of cameo appearances. And with the struggles that Cabral's had and Tensted, I think a lot of people were questioning why he doesn't start Marcus Leonardo.
Mm-hmm.
So then he goes and does it in this game. I think at one point, Leonardo had a touch in the 21st minute, and then for the next 29 minutes didn't have a touch. I think he completed two passes in the first half, and then Schmidt takes him off. So I think that's where my issue is really, not the fact that Leonardo started and had a poor game. It's the fact that Schmidt took him off, because that just, I think every one of those strikers, Cabral and Tengsted, their confidence is just, you know, how can you build any confidence from these sort of, because Schmidt's not afraid to make a change at halftime, I would say. And then he took Kosher off as well, you know, another player who's had his differences with Roger Schmidt this season.
Mm.
You know, it's just, things weren't going too bad, but you know, I don't know. It really confuses me, Albert, because it's because, like I said, I've wanted to see Marcus Leonardo start, and I've wanted to see Kotchu play in the number 10 role, and that's what he did. But then it didn't work, and I don't know. I think maybe what if I was to look a little bit deeper, and you know, João Mário was starting alongside João Neves in the midfield, and I actually thought Famalicão had so much. Well, won the game in midfield, really. You know, Topic and Zaidu Youssef combining for the second goal, and Gustavo Sarr getting assists for the first goal. You know, they sort of won that battle. And you know, Florentino eventually came on at halftime, but Florentino is the sort of player you want in midfield, to disrupt a midfield and defend well. And he wasn't starting. So many messy things there for Benfica. And add one final thing, which I'm not sure is completely right, but just there's something inside me that thinks that this might be true. Is Di Maria, who's been their most important player all season in terms of his chance creating, in terms of his goals and assist contributions, a vitally, vitally, vitally important player. I do feel like there is space on that right hand side for Benfica for the opposition to attack, because he obviously doesn't do that defensive duty. But how can you ask him to do defensive duty when he's so important? But I, once again, that's a thing that I feel that could have been ironed out. You know, that there could have been changes made to accommodate, but I don't think that's been done by Schmidt this season. Sorry, I've said so much there, Albert, and it's a bit of a rant. And I feel like that's been the thing this season with Benfica. I feel like I quite often rant because it feels so messy, and it feels like there's so many little elements. I find it quite hard to articulate the issues, but I guess that in a way that does articulate the issue with Benfica this season, that there's just so much going on, so many little things, so many narratives, so many potential stories and relationships between players and manager, et cetera, et cetera. And there you go. They've ruined your holiday.
No, there's a lot to respond to, but I'll come back on a few of those points. I think the thing with Di Maria for me is that you don't sign a, how old is he, 37, 36, whatever he is. You don't sign a 35, 36-year-old Di Maria to be a kind of a team player, shall we say. You're signing him for the luxury ability that he still has, a wand of a left foot, incredible class. But yeah, like you say, he's not going to be doing a kind of job sprinting up and down the pitch covering his fullback. What you do hope for that he perhaps hasn't given them, because I think he has pretty much delivered on the pitch what they wanted from him. I don't think you can really argue with that. I think perhaps the one thing he hasn't really delivered is the leadership that we hoped he might, or that he could have, given his age and his experience. I don't think he's particularly been a great leader. But I mean, on the pitch, I think he has more or less delivered what they could have hoped he would, especially in terms of the number of minutes he's played, which is quite impressive for a player of his age. I think it's funny, because I did also make a note of both Marcus Leonardo and Kotchu in this game. I think I just perhaps from a slightly different perspective, because the way I was looking at it was this. Neither had fantastic games, but I still think they both showed in flashes how they can be two of Benfica's best players. And I think it was significant that Kotchu started in the 10 position and Leonardo started in the striker position. And Leonardo had the best chance, that goal that was ruled out offside, in the first 2 minutes. I think he started the game very brightly, although I do agree that he got a little bit lost in the game. Perhaps not his fault, because as a striker, he relies on service. I think Kotchu also, with both of these players, you almost have to look at them at their individual performances rather than the team performance and how they were able to influence that, because they didn't particularly influence the team performance. But individually, I think they did both look dangerous in moments. And Kotchu actually also had a good chance, I think, in the first half, which wasn't taken. But yeah, I think for me, that when I looked at those two players, I just thought, this is two players who are both starting in their ideal position with 3 games of the season to go. Kotchu should have been doing that from the beginning of the season. Marcus Leonardo should have been doing that since he joined in January. And I think they both then would have developed a lot and improved over the season and contributed a lot more. And perhaps Benfica would be in a slightly different position now. But that's hard to predict. But the one thing that I did want to add to everything you just said is, whenever Benfica slip up this season, as they have multiple times, we spend a lot of time talking about bigger picture things, about team selection, about signings, about leadership, about all this stuff. But you also have to look at this game and just look at two instances of the very, very basics of football that were not done good enough, and two instances when Benfica defended very poorly and were punished by a team ready to punish them. The first goal, the Puma Rodriguez goal, great goal from Puma's perspective. Very, very poor defending, in my opinion, down the left-hand side from both Otamendi and Carreras, who both have good opportunities to stop Puma's run and to stop the shot. Neither of them take it. I think it's weak defending. It's poor defending. I expect better from Otamendi, certainly. Carreras, younger player, but I still, to be honest, for a player that's been playing in the Manchester United Academy, would expect better defensively from him for that goal. So from that perspective, I think that goal was poor. And then, of course, Barney, the second goal is a individual error from Florentino Luis, and it's a individual error that leads to a goal. And you know, this is just the basics of football, and we can talk all we like about bigger picture stuff, which is all very valid and all very true. But I also think there is a side to this, which is just that Benfica decided to have a poor game at the wrong time, and they just played badly. They started okay. Famalicão did really well to match them, and rather than improving, Benfica made some mistakes, slipped up, and they lost a game when the other team was simply better than them. And I don't think that's actually the first time that we've seen them do that this season. Do you want to come in?
Yeah, I was just because I think we shouldn't gloss over what Famalicão did in this game. And Amando Evangelista, you know, there's seven games in charge now for Famalicão. It's his third victory against the other ones coming against Silva Center Vizela. But he also, you know, he got the draw against Porto, and you know, it was sort of that midweek game. We sort of didn't get a chance to fully cover, where Sporting won 1-0.
They played well. It was probably Sporting's toughest game in the last 10 games, other than Porto game, obviously.
Exactly. So, you know, he's done really well with Famalicão. And they're looking like the team he's always thought they should be this season. You know, same players, vastly the same 11 he's putting out from when he came in charge. I wanted to, you know, I mentioned briefly about when discussing Benfica about their midfield in this game. Saïd Youssef, player we've covered so much, perhaps hasn't gone that extra step, but still, you know, when you consider the talent, the quality of player, you know, for this league, he's really top midfielder. But then Topic alongside me this game, you know, he was the player I was really interested to see them sign. Forgive me, I can't remember where he came from, but I think he was a bit of a Football Manager legend for, you know, but his career hadn't sort of gone on that trajectory. He'd sort of had a few dips, but, you know, this is Famalicão. They, you know, they can see quality in sort of hidden gems and players who might have lost their way slightly. And, you know, he's played all but one game for Famalicão this season. And like I said, that partnership with Youssef has been so good. And, you know, when you think of, they had Colin Bato last year, Garte the year before, I don't think he's quite as flashy as those two players. You know, Colin Bato could score a hell of a goal. Agate, it was quite clearly like just an engine, just all over the pitch. But in a way, I feel like he's more consistent than those two. Maybe that's not the right, but what I think the point I'm trying to say is I think Famalicão once again unearthed an excellent midfielder, and you know, they did well, you know, with Gustavo Sá as well, who's having a fabulous season. You know, making that step up just cementing himself as the starter in that number 10 role. I wonder if we'll see him move on. I think there were rumors with Benfica in the last month or so. But just a really good performance from Famalicão, and all those players really just, yeah, I think Evangelista's getting the best out of them now.
Yeah, I mean, I had the exact same thought, Barney, about Evangelista. And, you know, we forget what a good job he did at Aruga, getting them to the Europa Conference League. And, you know, it was one thing that we spoke about a lot with Famalicão and João Pedro Sousa, and I think it was difficult for them because they obviously went back to João Pedro Sousa after he had done great things with the club, and they expected those things to happen again. And perhaps it was difficult to accept or understand when those things just... It just wasn't really happening under him, was it? It wasn't quite clicking. He wasn't getting the best out of the players. They were underperforming. And I think that's been the real change under Evangelista, is that a lot of players who were underperforming are now playing perhaps at their best level. And, you know, João de Cadiz is a great example of that. Puma, Gustavo Saad, you know, a couple of players that you mentioned. All brilliant examples of that. And I think it's a very shrewd managerial appointment, and I think perhaps, you know, Evangelista wasn't the most well-known name on the Portuguese managerial circuit, but I think it's been a really good appointment, and I think for the first time now we're looking with optimism at Famalicão's future, and especially, you know, given that I don't think there's tons of star players in that side that are really going to leave. Maybe Gustavo Sá can command a decent fee. Maybe João de Cadiz will take a move to another club if it materializes, but ultimately I don't think there's too many players in that team that are going to be taken away if they don't want them to. And so I think it could be an interesting summer and an interesting year next year for Famalicão.
And we should also praise Luis Junior, the goalkeeper, as well.
Excellent.
Quite often as one of the big teams lose, you know, the opposing goalkeeper's a hell of a game, and he was, I think he had 10 saves, prevented 2.38 goals against Benfica. So, you know, he's only 23. So, you know, he is. I reckon if anything, he could be one of the biggest stars to leave this Famalicão team in the summer.
No, that's a great point. I just realised, Barney, I didn't put the Braga game in there. That was actually a really good game.
Are you recording as well?
Yeah.
Oh.
Why?
I thought that's what you're about to say, and then I can't remember hearing recording in progress.
No, it says recording.
Oh, cool.
I just realized, shit, we should have done that. It's so stupid, because it was like the most mad game.
We can do it if you want.
Should we just quickly do Shavs and Porto, just do like a point each for each team?
Yeah. I've got much for Shavs.
Yeah, all right, cool. All right, well, let's quickly touch on the two games involving the other top four sides in the battle for third place. The first being Chaves versus Porto, a game where Porto played out a convincing 3-0 win against the 17th place side, helped by a red card for Junior Pius, which made Chaves' job an awful lot harder. It's another good performance, Barney, since the election of Andrea Villas-Boas as president after a good performance against Sporting last week. And I think it's an interesting time for Porto because despite all of the turmoil that's been taking place recently, I think I've just got a sense that it's going to be a fairly routine end to the season for them. Obviously, all eyes on what's going to happen in the summer and the changes that might take place then. But in the meantime, I think probably Barney will see more of a calmness in Sergio Conceição. I think there's a lot of pressure off the players. Obviously, there is still something to fight for with Braga only 1 point behind them, and they want to keep that third place secure. But in general, I think this type of performance is something that we'll see over the next couple of games. A more calm, level-headed performance from Porto with less pressure on their shoulders. Perhaps less angst coming from the touchline.
Yeah, it does feel like there's been a bit of a release. Despite rumours of Conceição potentially going to AC Milan, it just feels, I don't know, maybe that they can just see that they know where they are in the league. Although obviously they've still got that little toss with Braga, but these are routine games. Against Shabs away. This was always going to be an easy game for Porto. I think, Francisco Conceição was had a hell of a game in this one. Enjoyed that battle with Pierce, who obviously got his two yellows, and Conceição was, just tormenting him on that. So I did want to talk a little bit about Taremi, but you had a really good game getting a start in this game. And because he's also been confirmed this week as going to Inter. I think everyone suspected that was the case, but I think Inzaghi himself has sort of come out and said, he'll be here next year. I just consistency seems to be the word that I'm thinking a lot about with Porto at the moment. And this, I think, at the beginning of the season, this was Taremi's first time in his career in Portugal where he wasn't scoring regularly. He is Mr. Consistent when it comes to being a striker in Portugal. His goal scoring record for even at Rio Ave was incredible. I just wonder if, seeing him in this game scoring that penalty and getting an assist and just looking a bit like his old self, really. I just wonder if, I don't know, I've said it before, but if he could have played a bigger part in them this season, and if Conceição could have managed him better in terms of keeping him in the squad, or not, I don't know. I just really like Taremi. It feels like it's a bit of a sad end to his career. Although, as you say, he could actually feature for the rest of the season now that everything's sort of almost done and dusted, as it were.
Mm. That's a great point. And I think, what we're left with when we look back at this season for Porto is probably a lot of what ifs. And I think it is a shame, like you said, the likes of Taremi who've not really performed, and I completely agree. It's a real shame that how his season has gone, as he should be leaving Porto as a modern day legend. Really, I think what we're looking at really with Porto though is just the end of a cycle. A lot of players coming to the end of their time at the club, possibly the manager as well. We obviously now have a new president. We expect a change in direction in the new season and potentially some new signings to go with it. So obviously it's not a very enjoyable thing for Porto fans to go through, because they want their team to be doing well every season. But I think it probably is the worst it's going to be for a little while. Touch wood. Although a result like this, as I said, helped by the fact that Shabs played with 10 men for a lot of the game, but still a lot of positives. Although the same positives that we've pointed out quite a few times this season, Chico Conceição, Evan Ilson up front, a few other players in that time. So definitely still some positives to take for Porto. And I think what we are seeing is the foundations of something that can be built on, enough good players and some more young players coming into the side, which is really pleasing to see. But quite tough to read a lot into Porto at this time of the season, other than it's good for them to get a much needed win to keep their aim now of finishing third alive.
Well, yeah, I think the young player thing is true. Martin Fernandez got another start at right back. João Mendes, who came out, was featured earlier in the season when they had their defensive issues in terms of injuries, but didn't really come back into the team after that. And then, but I think the player who I actually saw a lot of Porto fans suggesting is probably the most exciting out of those three is Gonçalo Souza, this attacking midfielder, who had his a brief cameo. With all these young players, I get excited and sort of wish, oh, I wish I'd seen them more of them earlier in the season. But yeah, there you go. I mean, it's yeah, Shavs. We talked about them in previous show having sort of not a hope in hell. Despite Porto's form and turbulence around them at the moment, but yeah, I it's yeah, I haven't got much. I Shavs for me, Shavs are down and out. But I know they've got their Famalicão next weekend and Sporting last day of the season. But yeah, Sporting might be on the beach. Who knows?
It's looking very, very unlikely now. 5 points adrift with two games to go. They've got a hope that Porto and Lens lose both games and they win their two, and even that will only see them in the relegation playoff. So pretty poor times at Shavs at the moment, as it has been a lot recently. The red card felt quite harsh, in my opinion, Barney. It was a real setback. It's a season which has been plagued by poor performances and ill fortune, and this just felt like another example of how everything just seems to be going against Shavs in a way. I do think the decision was a bit harsh. I think he only really steps on his opponent's foot rather than sort of going studs up on someone's ankle. That said, would it even have made a difference if they played this game with 11 men in the grand scheme of things? So, it probably isn't the most controversial decision in the world, but it was a bit harsh, and you never know, things might have been different if they'd kept 11 men on the pitch. On to Braga then, Barney, who played out one of the craziest games of the weekend. They scored a last minute winner to beat Casapia 4-3. Seven goals in this game, a red card, couple of absolute bangers as well from Braga, and it was a really amazing game for the neutral, definitely, probably a bit of a heart attack for Braga fans. Very, very important for them to get a win, as I say, keeps them in touching distance of third place. But I hate to be the negative guy, Barney, but they conceded three goals at home to Casapia, and if you're trying to build a strong season and a good team, that's not really the way they should be playing.
No, although I think the excitement of this one and the winner from Álvaro Ruiz was which was delightful. Would have I just don't feel Braga fans are looking for consistency at this moment. It's been such a turbulent season in terms of the manager and in recent weeks and just little things like Jalo confirmed leaving like quite early on in this second half of the season and stuff like that. 3 points at the end of the day is great. I think. Quickly on the Álvaro Ruiz winner, I'm sure there's a Kevin De Bruyne goal which is like that, where like he sort of it's a sort of deft touch, to sort of as if he's got to cut back, but then he keeps going and then just curls it beautifully into the top corner. I think, yeah, what a moment for Álvaro Ruiz as well. You saw him celebrating at the end. That would have meant a lot for him. And I think that it's times like these when he starts scoring again that you sort of remember that he has been a real good. Oh, what's the word? I was going to say servant. I don't know. It just,
He's a trier. He's a
he is a
trier.
trier, and he's. I think he has got a little bit of a home at Braga. I don't think
Yeah.
that's fair to say. I just think we would we I we did sort of predict that Casapia might get goals in this game. They've been improved in reach recently. Yuki Sommer's looking. Good again. He's found a bit of form. Nice to see Leandro Lello as well get a goal. We haven't quite seen him at his best this season. I think he was rumored of a move to Prague at the end of last year. So yeah, it was a really thrilling game. I think the result was probably fair and yeah, I'll just yeah just appreciate the amount of goals we were given.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Álvaro Ruiz scoring two goals in one game. Did he double his goal tally for the season in one game? That's what I want to know. But of course, as you say, very important goals to get. Rodrigo Salazar as well, Barney, once again making an impact in midfield. And for me, he looks like the great underused player by Braga this season. I think, something we spoke about a couple of weeks ago about how they've not really found a place for him in the midfield. And I just think they really could have done a lot more to find space for him to play more minutes. Obviously, João Moutinho was playing very well, but I do wonder if Salazar offers you a bit more than Moutinho, because I think with Salazar you get goals that you don't get with Moutinho. So obviously hindsight's very easy to look back on, but I think definitely next season he has to be a much more consistent starter for Braga, because he definitely could have had more minutes. Just lastly on Kasper Barney, it does look like their manager will be signing a new deal. So Gonçalo Sanchez, the manager who came in, only signed a deal until the end of the season. So there was a question mark somewhat over whether he would stay. But I think for Kasper, the story of their season really has been that I think they have improved since he's come in, because they did start slowly. They were one of these teams last year who really impressed us, a newly promoted team with fresh ideas, small budget, but made an impact on the league. This season, we were talking about them being more conservative at the start of the season. But now under the new manager, I think they are starting to impress themselves. Like you, I was pleased to see Leonardo Leno score, because it's been far too quiet a season for him, after the reputation he built up last season. And another goal for Yuki Soma as well. He's a favourite of ours on the podcast. So yeah, look, very, very good for Kasper to go to Braga and get 3 goals. From their perspective, they'll be disappointed really not to get anything out of a game where they scored 3 goals against a big club. But from Braga's perspective, of course, this is an important win as they look to hunt down Porto in third place. All right, Barney, shall we do one more game? Because of course there was one team confirmed relegated this weekend, as Vizela fell to defeat against Moreirense and saw their 3-year stint in the Primeira Liga coming to an end. They put in a lot of effort, as they have all season, but they didn't have the quality to make a breakthrough and were undone by a world-class finish from Lawrence Afori, which saw the game end 1-0. They are technically only 6 points adrift from Portimonense. So just to clarify, even if they were to win both those games and Portimonense lose both and they were to draw a level, tiebreakers in the Premier League are defined by head-to-head rather than goal difference. And I believe this season, Portimonense beat Vizela once and they drew on the second game. So that means that even if Vizela were to draw level on points with Portimonense would finish above them in the table. It is a shame to see Vizela go down, Barney. It's a team that we have a lot of time for. It's a team that we've enjoyed watching ever since Alvaro Pacheco brought them up, and they survived very late into the first season that they were here, and they had a promising second season in the Primeira Liga. But then this season, things have obviously gone south. We have to be honest, I think they did deserve to be relegated. They haven't been good enough, especially in the second half of the season when we wanted to see progression, we wanted to see improvement. And we've just never seen enough quality for them to really deserve to stay up.
No, I mean, you mentioned the head-to-head with Portimonense there. That game and the recent game against Chaves, where they lost that game as well. That was the real, those were the kickers, really. Those were the ones that they had to get a result in, and they failed to do so. Yeah, lots of players there that were a big fan of, lots of talent. Samu, the captain, I think, is the one for me. He's one of my favourite midfielders in this league. I think he's been used in by the different managers they've had this season in the wrong position. I think he looks best when he's further up the pitch, and yeah, he was absolutely in bits at the end of the game against Morens. Yeah, they've I don't know, they you fall in love with some of these players, don't you, these individuals, but then I think they sort of cloud your vision sometimes. And we shouldn't forget the size of the club that Vizela are. No matter how big their support are, that this is a they've that it was a remarkable achievement for them to get up in this division, and to stay for as long as they have is good as well. I think, they've scored the least amount of goals this season in the league, but that's with the eighth most shots per game. So there's, you know, and this is with Ascend as their striker as well. So
Is he
it's
still
a
in the top three goal scorers in the league or something crazy? So.
yes. So like, there's a lot to unpack there. I think obviously Ascend is a hell of a goal scorer. I think in terms of how he's performing against his XG, he's sort of bang on. But the rest of the team, you know, as I said, the eighth most shots per game in the league, but with the lowest goals, you know, that's where the issues were. And obviously defensively, they haven't been great as well. Lots of talk about the Liberais sort of staying on next season. You know, it's though there have been glimpses of some nice football, and you look at players like Dominus Quina getting and Diogo Nascimento as well, the midfielder on loan from Benfica, the sort of the roles they've played in his teams in his in the matches he's been in charge of recently. You know, there are signs of good football, but at the end of the day, I'll just go back to my original point. You know, there's just key games where they haven't got results. So I'm sad to see him go. I expect to see one or two players, like I mentioned, Nascimento, Samu as well. I'd love to see him come back, although you know he's a bit of a club legend. He might stick around. So, and Ascend as well. I think there was a report that I think he had a relegation release clause where he could leave on a free if they got relegated. So.
That is terrible business if it's true, because they've done themselves out of probably their biggest ever sale in Semen
Yeah.
Ascend. I mean, if that's true, I will be. I'm not even a Vizela fan, and I would be absolutely fuming. I mean, the only disappointment for me from Vizela's perspective, I mean, I say the only disappointment, I've been disappointed in him for weeks for various reasons. But in this game was, I did feel like there were players on the pitch who seemed resigned to their fate, perhaps, and didn't play as well as they could have. I mean, it's obviously a shame that they're relegated by losing 1-0 to Moreirense in a much win game, and that, you know, Moreirense away is not the toughest game. Let's say it as it is. You know, that's not, you know, it's not like a game where they're huge underdogs. You know, despite the difference in league table, those are not two hugely different teams. But as you said, that's a story that we've seen all season, them losing games which really aren't the hardest. But yeah, they can't make the most of them. Obviously, not much to say on Moreirense at this point in the season. Their season's over. No European qualification, good win, just to end on what really, really was a sublime goal from Laurent Sofori. If you haven't seen it already, there is a link to it on our Twitter page. If you head over there, you'll scroll down, you'll find it. It's a wonderful strike, but it's a type of strike that I always say we all dream of scoring a goal like that.
Oh yeah, it was a hell of a hit. I think I think a lot of the season and in the sort of build up to this season as well, I was looking at Gonçalo Franco, sort of that midfielder, Allan, the attacking midfielder, other players. Afori's been in, I think he's played every single game for Moreirense this season. He's got the one of the best passing accuracies in the league, and you know in that top 10 you're getting the likes of centre backs who just pass it around. You know he's a sky up there, so he's a hell of a player. I think he came from Famalicão, didn't he? So, yeah, great for him to get that goal. I've actually done a bit of work because I think for too long I've been lazily saying, "Oh, Andre Lewis has left," and they haven't looked as good as they were in the first half of the season. The stats were with Andre Lewis and the team, they were getting 1.73 points per game. With him out of the team, they were getting 1.43 points per game. So there's not much of a difference, and
It's not drastic, but neither
they've.
number is very high.
No, but they've actually remained in sixth place since he's left. They dropped down to seventh a couple of weeks ago, but they're back up into sixth. So they, I think,
I think the one thing would be interesting to see would be the gap between them and fifth and fourth, and whether that's extended, because they've obviously stayed in sixth, but I think the gap has definitely extended between the top four and fifth and sixth.
yeah, but I think what I'm trying to say is just put in perspective, you know, this they're also well they're a promoted team, and though they haven't been as flashy as they were in the first half of the season, they've still had a, you know, an excellent campaign. And yeah, but you know, watch this goal if you haven't seen it, because it is a rocket.
Absolutely. Well, I think that is all we've got time for on this episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast. As always, if you enjoyed listening, you can consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or a star rating on Spotify. And if you enjoy listening every week, definitely check out how you become a Long Ball Football Socio for just £1 a month. on our Patreon page. But that's just it to say. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.